This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, tit-for-tat tariffs provoke escalating trade tensions between the world's two largest economies. Can Beijing and Washington pull back from the brink before triggering a trade war? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Tit-for-tat tariffs. First, the Trump administration imposed tariffs on steel and aluminum from China, 25% on steel and 10% on aluminum. Beijing responded by imposing reciprocal tariffs on American pork and eight other kinds of goods, and 15% on fruit and 120 types of commodities. Then President Donald Trump threatened to slap 25% tariffs on approximately $50 billion in Chinese imports, including aerospace, medical, and information technology products, to which Beijing responded by announcing tariffs on $50 billion worth of U.S. goods. The Chinese measures would boost tariffs by 25% on about 106 U.S. products, including soybeans, aircraft, and cars. None of the tariffs goes into effect immediately and may never be imposed if the two sides eventually agree on a deal to open China further to U.S. imports. There is a bipartisan consensus in the United States that China engages in unfair trading practices and violates U.S. intellectual property rights. However, many Republicans, as well as stakeholders in the manufacturing and agricultural sectors, say imposing tariffs on Beijing actually hurts America's agricultural and industrial exports more than it helps them, and the action may do little to deter Beijing from engaging in its use of intimidation and other unfair practices to acquire American technology. The U.S.-China dispute has fueled concern it could stymie a global economic recovery if other countries raise their own import barriers. It has already roiled international stock markets. And aside from trade, the United States and China may not see eye to eye on other critical geopolitical matters coming to the fore, such as how to best curb Pyongyang's nuclear program. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made a surprise trip to Beijing in late March to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping. Despite strained relations, Kim and Xi appear to have reinvigorated the historical bonds between the two countries and reaffirmed China's crucial role in the future of the Korean Peninsula. This as the prospect of direct talks are being discussed between Kim Jong-un and President Trump. To what extent will the current trade dispute sap leverage from Washington as it seeks Beijing's cooperation on curbing North Korea's nuclear ambitions and resolving territorial disputes in the South China Sea? Well, with us to discuss the implications of the escalating trade tensions between the United States and China are two distinguished regional experts. Bonnie Glaser is Senior Advisor for Asia and the Director of the China Power Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and that's a think tank here in Washington. And Ding Cheng, he's Senior Research Fellow at the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. That's a policy group also based in Washington. And both panelists join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Well, Bonnie Glaser, let me begin with you. Let's just step back a minute and examine what the specific allegations are from the Trump administration against China with respect to trade, that which triggered these announcement of tariffs.
Well, the Trump administration has charged that China is pursuing predatory trade practices in a number of areas. There's stealing of intellectual property. There's forced technology transfer. When American companies want to invest in China, they have to be part of a joint venture, and they're forced to hand over their intellectual property. There's also subsidies to Chinese industries. There's also limited market access. There are so many sectors in which Americans cannot invest in China. Relatively speaking, the United States economy is very, very open. And so what we see is a lack of reciprocity. And this is not a new issue, of course, under the Trump administration. This has been building over a long period of time. China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001, and the Trump administration argues that China has not really complied with the WTO and that China has benefited from being part of this international economic system, and that their benefits have actually been at the expense of other countries, especially the United States.
Turning to you, Dean Cheng, for your take on what triggered these tariffs, adding to what Bonnie said, an excellent tee up. So the question is, if all that is the case, do these tariffs address that problem?
The trade issue is part of a larger set of issues that Mr. Trump has laid out about the Chinese. Simply on the economic front, for example, there were accusations during the election season about currency manipulation by the Chinese. We see what could be termed structural impediments, meaning not just subsidies and financial things, but, for example, Chinese efforts to use legal implements and others to limit American access and really global access to China's markets. Do the tariffs address this issue? Tariffs are a sledgehammer. So what they're very good at is getting people's attention. And you'll notice that simply invoking the term tariff has caused global markets, as you noted, to roil, but also certainly has gotten Beijing's attention. Now, the issue with the sledgehammer is sometimes that's the tool you want to use, and sometimes it's not. So the good news here, I suppose, is that at the moment, everyone's talking about imposing tariffs, but we are 30 days out. There is an opportunity here for one or both sides really to modify their behavior and hopefully not actually see the imposition of them. But I do think the administration, by invoking the possibility of tariffs, is also signaling Beijing that it is very serious about addressing the broader financial and economic imbalance between the U.S. and China.
So just a quick follow-up. Both sets of tariffs, that is the first set that the Trump administration announced on steel and aluminum and the second set on the $50 billion of products, they haven't actually been imposed yet.
I believe that that's the case. I believe that at the moment they're still working their way through, in part because when the U.S. is talking about imposing tariffs, our own producers do have an opportunity to also make clear their positions to the administration.
Well, back to you, Bonnie Glaser. In terms of Chinese retaliation, of course, it didn't take long for them to say, okay, now we're imposing tariffs on you and on products that come from sensitive industries. Many of these products come from states in which Mr. Trump did very well, so they're trying to impose a political cost. Interesting.
There's a difference, though, between the way the United States is doing this and the way China is doing it. The U.S., of course, has procedures in place, and we have a 60-day comment period after the announcement. And so, yes, producers or average citizens who are worried about prices going up can, in fact, offer their comments, and the Trump administration says there could potentially be revisions made in the list. Chinese, it's not an open society. And so all that they do is announce the list. We don't actually know when the Chinese are going to put this into place. But it's possible that the Chinese could implement this even before this 60-day comment period is over in the United States. Now, there is a conversation going on between U.S. and Chinese officials, and the hope is that this threat of tariffs will, in fact, cause the Chinese to make an offer to the United States that is more appealing than the offers they have made so far.
Well, back to you, Dean Cheng. Many people here in the United States in these industries that could be affected are lobbying the administration to try to negotiate with China before the imposition of tariffs actually take hold. But Bonnie makes a very good point. We're talking about apples and oranges here. This is a liberal economy, democratic political system where we have rules in place, and China doesn't. And we know that Xi Jinping is becoming even more authoritarian. He has strengthened his grip on power.
Absolutely. We are talking, in a sense, about apples and soybeans. We are talking here about a very different system. But each side, particularly the American side, has to operate within its own rules. The U.S. system, it has been observed, was created to function slowly, deliberately, and not always very efficiently. And we certainly have a system that seems to live up to all of those aspects. But the reality is that we are also a rule of law society. And that means that you can't just go and issue diktats from the White House and expect everyone to just go along. We believe in the vibrancy of a multitude of voices. The Chinese clearly don't see things the same way. At the end of the day, however, it is important to note whether it's intellectual property rights, whether it is structural impediments to free trade, it's not just the United States that's affected. Chinese actions towards South Korea, Chinese actions towards Japan, even towards Europe, demonstrate a consistent pattern of not really engaging in free trade war and engaging in intellectual property theft around the world. So I think part of the administration's hope here is to say, look, China is a qualitatively different kind of bad actor. And ideally, some of these other countries may actually join the United States.
Well, that leads me to ask you, Bonnie Glaser, given the violation on the part of China of intellectual property rights, its lack of fair trade practices, what other measures would have been more appropriate, in your view, short of the tariffs? There could be other measures the United States could take either unilaterally or preferably perhaps in conjunction with allies who are also affected by Chinese unfair trade practices.
Well, I certainly believe that working with other countries who face the same challenges can be more effective than working unilaterally. Many of the other options available to the Trump administration, however, would not have had immediate effect. So filing WTO cases, for example, against China, that can take years to work through the system, even if the ruling were eventually in favor of the United States. President Trump could already be out of office, and he really did want to see immediate results. Of course, another option that had been available to the United States was to go ahead with the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and the U.S. walked away from that deal. Again, that would have set higher standards for labor and environment and could have dealt with issues like state-owned enterprises. Although China was not a part of the deal, over time there would have been a lot of pressure on China to join and adopt all of the agreements that are put in place. So the last option really was just returning to dialogue. And we've been doing that with China now for probably about 15 years about so many of these issues. And the Chinese keep promising to open up certain sectors and then they don't follow through, or every time we meet, they announce the same deliverable that they're going to do something that, and then they want us to celebrate it, even though it isn't even really implemented. So the Trump administration is frustrated. It wants immediate results. And I think what it believes is that by actually following through and announcing these tariffs, that they will force the Chinese again to make a much more credible offer.
Dean Cheng, your take on other options that might have been available. Bonnie Glaser talks about the TPP. Ironically, President Trump withdrew from that, the very Trans-Pacific Partnership that perhaps could have isolated China and put more pressure and set rules of the road.
Well, regarding TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, to be fair to this administration, yes, at the end of the day, having been elected president, Mr. Trump proceeded to withdraw from that. But during the election campaign, both he and Hillary Clinton, his Democratic Party opponent, were both very vocal in opposing TPP. I'd say that, in fact, right now, there is a crisis in the United States, not relating to trade with China, but more broadly on where does the U.S. stand on the entire issue of free trade? I think we are in a moment of transition here. That being said, are there other tools? I think Bonnie did a great job of laying out some of the various options. And as she notes, all of them would have taken a lot of time. WTO actions in particular have often not only taken years, but often have finally been resolved after the issue itself, the industry has fallen into decline in many cases. I do also want to note here, there's a lot of discussion that makes this seem almost apocalyptic, trade wars. And my friend Derek Scissors suggests that actually we're in the middle of a trade slap fight. We are engaging in skirmishes. We're engaging in limited actions. We still do have common periods and things like that.
You're listening to Encounter on The Voice of America. My guests are Bonnie Glaser. She's Senior Advisor for Asia and Director of the China Power Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Dean Cheng, from whom you just heard. He's Senior Research Fellow in the Asian Studies Center at the Washington-based Heritage Foundation. And we're discussing the increasing trade and geopolitical tensions between Washington and Beijing as they engage in tit-for-tat tariffs. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Well, here's a shout out to Seth Labaran. He's from Jos, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our special guest talking about U.S.-China relations. Back to you, Bonnie Glaser, to discuss the impact of this back and forth on tariffs. on other issues of great concern to the United States and China, such as curbing Pyongyang's nuclear ambitions? And what about the recent meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Xi Jinping, which was unexpected, very secretive, and then it came out in the open? What impact will this have on U.S. efforts, along with South Korea, to curb North Korea's program? What's the relationship?
Well, I think that China still wants to preserve an amicable relationship with the United States. And particularly, Xi Jinping wants to have a good relationship with President Trump. And I would say the same is true of President Trump. They believe that that relationship is important. And so when we're having all this friction over trade, I actually think that there is reason to ensure that, to some extent, that we stay on the same page on the North Korea issue. And this is particularly true for Xi Jinping. If he works with President Trump on trying to bring Kim Jong-un towards the direction of eliminating his nuclear weapons, that can have a positive effect on U.S.-China relations. So I do not think that this will have a negative spillover, as I think some observers suggest. Right now, the United States and China have converging interests regarding North Korea. There's more cooperation than there has been in a long, long time. And Xi Jinping would like to have a meeting between Kim Jong-un and President Trump, that the best outcome for China is to have the resumption of diplomacy, maybe even in the six-party talks format, returning to Beijing with China as the host. And they can maximize their influence that way. And that might be what is the agreement between Trump and Kim Jong-un. That is one possibility. So I think that as long as China maintains its sanctions, and that is compliance with the United Nations sanctions on North Korea, then I think that the U.S. and China can continue to work on this. They have a lot of shared interest. In the long run, their interests diverge about presence of U.S. troops on the peninsula and the alliance with South Korea, but that's much further down the road.
So, Dean Cheng, do you agree that the United States and China converge on this issue of North Korea, and that this trade dispute, which is quite acute at the moment and looks like there's quite a bit of friction, you don't think that that's going to affect negatively U.S. and China's ability to rein in North Korea?
Well, actually, what worries me is how China looks at the United States in the context of all of these various issues. And what worries me is I think Beijing may be coming to the conclusion that Washington is fundamentally hostile to them. So it's not just the North Korea issue or the trade issue, but both of those, plus the opening to Taiwan that the president did when he was still president-elect. We have the much higher tempo of freedom of navigation operations in the South China Sea. I think we've now done a seventh one fairly recently. I think that from Beijing's perspective, when they are looking at the U.S. and looking at these various actions, we see military, we see political, we now see economic. How is Beijing interpreting all of this? Now, none of that should be seen as an argument against any of the specific measures. But the question is there a message that's going along with all of these actions to Beijing that is more of the carrot relative to these sticks? And it may well be that on North Korea, that this is where there may well be back-channel communications to Beijing saying, look, we do want to cooperate with you, that this is not a fundamentally hostile environment. I certainly hope that that's the case.
Well, back to you, Bonnie Glazer. So in terms of other issues on which the United States and China do not see eye to eye, do you see any kind of spillover if the United States continues on imposing these tariffs and then we receive the tariffs from China? You don't see this as spilling over and complicating our work or our relationship on these other very critical issues of geopolitical concern?
I think there's going to be an effort by both sides to keep these issues compartmentalized. It does not serve, I think, the interests of either Washington or Beijing to have this spill over to other areas. In the South China Sea, the Chinese have made so much headway since they built 7 artificial islands and 3 of which are major military outposts, which they have militarized. The United States is doing nothing other than sailing ships through waters near these islands. We are doing nothing to try and expel the Chinese. That's not going to be a policy that we will adopt, I think, under any circumstances. So I think the Chinese have very little to worry about in the South China Sea. They're in a consolidation phase, and I think they're quite pleased with the headway they've made. They're a little bit more concerned about Taiwan. Recently, the U.S. Congress passed the Taiwan Travel Act, and there have been a few, not very senior officials, but deputy assistant secretaries who have traveled to Taiwan. It's not unprecedented, but I think the Chinese are afraid of the slippery slope, that today it's a mid-level official, and then all of a sudden there could be a very senior official, even potentially President Tsai Ing-wen from Taiwan, coming to the United States, not on a transit, but on a real visit, maybe having another phone call with President Trump. Those are the kinds of things that I think they worry about. So the Chinese are laying down markers. They're trying to signal the Trump administration not to go too far, not to cross their red lines. But the U.S. has not done so far. But I do think there is really an effort to try to keep all of these issues in separate boxes, because mixing them together can have a very volatile consequence.
Well, turning to you, Dean Cheng, do you see the ability on both parts to compartmentalize these issues? Or do you think the United States could be giving up a little bit of leverage as they use a sledgehammer, as you said earlier, with respect to these tariffs, notwithstanding the very real problem that China poses with respect to its unfair trade practices, its stealing of intellectual property, etc.?
I think that both sides, I agree with Bonnie, would like to compartmentalize, but at the top, in particular in China, with Xi Jinping basically having drawn so much power to himself, at the end of the day, these issues aren't compartmentalized in his mind. I think that the trade issue, and this is where for both sides it does shine through, is at the end of the day, even in a dictatorship, staying in power depends on keeping the population fairly quiet. That really does entail ensuring economic growth, economic development. And a trade war will affect both sides' economies. And I think that given that situation, both sides are incentivized, one, to try and compartmentalize and not have it spill over, and two, I do believe at the end of the day, both sides have certain incentives to try and reach some kind of solution that both sides can live with. Now, arrayed against that is going to be interest groups in both countries that are going to be pushing in the other direction. With midterm elections coming up in the United States, there is going to be the Chinese threat of retaliation is clearly aimed at influencing that. In China, it's less clear what those special interests might be, but almost certainly as their economy's rate of growth slows down, you're also going to likely see pressure on Xi from various elements bubbling up from underneath about saying, let's find a solution.
As we close, very briefly, back to you, Bonnie Glaser, with respect to the tariffs and a potential trade war, do you see the two sides coming to the table in this interim period to head that off?
I would say there's about a 50-50 chance that we will have more steps taken by both sides. And I think both sides will try, but the Trump administration has set the bar high. China has made some offers to the United States, and whatever they have offered so far behind closed doors has not been acceptable yet to the Trump administration. So trade war is still possible, but let's remember, President Trump is somebody who wants to cut a deal. He wants to be the one who has solved this problem, done more for the American people than any other president. So he has some incentive, I think, to negotiate.
You get the last word, Dean Cheng, on whether or not there can be a meeting of the minds. And if there isn't, do you see winners and losers? I mean, would the United States inadvertently be hurting itself more by not coming back from the brink?
I think a real trade war will wind up in one of those situations where there are very, very few winners. I think that the one good thing about studying history is that you've seen the effects of trade wars in the past, and it's not been pretty. So I'm perhaps uncharacteristically, a little more optimistic that at the end of the day, whatever actions are implemented, that you will avoid a full-scale trade war.
On that cautiously optimistic note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Bonnie Glaser, Senior Advisor for Asia at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and Dean Cheng, Senior Research Fellow in the Asian Studies Center at the Heritage Foundation. Thanks so much to both of you for your terrific insights.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having us.
Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Thomas Blondet. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.